from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Dan Hurley going back to UConn isn't the only thing happening today. Hey, welcome to the show, Maggie Gray and Joe Perloff. We're trying to solve all the Lakers' woes of who should be their next head coach. Where's LeBron in all of this? Where's J.J. Redick in all of this? But in the meantime, one of the biggest stories in sports, Pearl, is without a doubt Caitlin Clark. And this sort of like down the middle, cut the baby in half situation happened yesterday where she was left off the Olympic team. There was outrage on some sides. There was rejoicing maybe on other sides where people thought she was being handed too much too soon. Well, now she's going to be an alternate. So the moment anyone in the backcourt, like if Chelsea Gray can't play because she hasn't been healthy this entire season, Caitlin's going to make it as an alternate. So I don't know where this leaves us with the story. Kind of a little bit of a, I don't know, to me, not disappointing, but kind of an odd ending to the story if she ends up making it as an alternate.
Let's be honest. Like, what is Caitlin Clark really here? Is she a WNBA player? Is she the greatest take generator in the history of sports? Like, she's being, and it's almost like she gets lost in the conversation. And she becomes a symbol that is so much bigger than just herself. She becomes a symbol of white players. She becomes a symbol of women's basketball. It's interesting, too. And she keeps on trying to downplay it and just say, I want to go out there and play ball. So it's funny that you would say that is somewhat of a disappointing ending. Like, I'm not really sure what we want out of this Caitlin Clark thing exactly. Is it we want to see her play? We want to see her grow the sport? It's just become such a big, sort of hard thing to wrap my head around.
Well, because it's a lot of things. Sometimes athletes do become symbols for things. And she's definitely touched on a lot of different ones. But there's no denying that she brings out something in people. Her style of play brings out something in people and just who she
I feel like that's who been she lost. Is.
I think it's how she played. Like, let's not forget the whole reason why she has the platform and how she's ascended to this stardom begins with how she plays.
Yeah, but it feels like we've almost lost track of that.
Yeah, and why I say it's kind of a, I don't say disappointing ending, because if she makes the Olympic team, fantastic. And if she doesn't and the women go win gold, great for them too. Like, nobody's begrudging, a gold medal winning team.
It's almost a can't lose situation in that sense.
But in some ways, it kind of feels a little bit like a cop out too, because I think people like me who were miffed by her being left off the original roster were wondering the reason why. And was it because there were other women who were more deserving who would be on the team before her? Well, that's not going to change now by making her an alternate. There's still going to be another person who is more deserving because she got to the WNBA a month ago. So was that really the reason, or is there something else at play here with more of a Isaiah Thomas on the Dream Team in 92 situation with Michael Jordan freezing him out?
Yeah, I mean, could it be a combo factor where like they're like, oh, she's close as a player, but not quite. And then there are, we think we'll make people mad if she's on the bench. So you do admit that there are bigger forces than just basketball. Like you've said yesterday that the marketing reasons are a real reason. Yeah. Like they should keep growing the sport. But maybe they weighed it and said, you know what? I understand like she'll grow the sport, but I just don't think she's there quite there as a player. She just misses. She's not quite there. So maybe that was their argument. You're right. It is a little flimsy. And maybe there's no consistency here at all. But if she's playing in Paris, maybe we'll all forget about this period.
Maybe this is another part though. It's like, how are her teammates going to treat her now that they're teammates? You know, it's one thing if you're, you know, hard fouls and stuff like that when she's an opponent, but how do they treat her as a member of Team USA?
I assume perfectly nice.
I think honestly, I thought it'd be better for her to be their teammate. Like, let's all start gelling a little bit and get a little chemistry between her and some of these veterans who may have an axe to grind or something. Like,
but ironically, which is worse for the sport, because we want to see people doing controversial things to Caitlin Clark because it gets a lot of publicity. She shouldn't. Well, won't she just normally just acclimate to the league and the league will acclimate to her? Isn't it just a matter of time before everyone's used to her and she becomes a star amongst other stars?
No doubt. But here's the, I think the one part of it, we're talking about Caitlin Clark now, might be the first alternate or one of the two alternates who could make Team USA after all this hubbub about whether or not she was snubbed or not snubbed. Now she could be an alternate. Hasn't been named one yet, but she could be one. I think here's one of the part where people like me feel a certain way about this, like she should have been on the team from the very beginning. And here's why. I think a combination of understanding women's sports and also understanding media and sports, which is when you have people's attention doesn't mean you're going to have it forever. You know, ask boxing and horse racing how that's, you know, people will move on to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. And I think if you are this sport who now has everybody's attention for whatever reason it is, it's a positive reason, right? It's not because like she's in the headlines, like getting arrested out at clubs or something. And that's why we're all paying attention. It's a positive headline where she is bringing like eyeballs and notoriety to the sport. And I think there's a fear that if you do something without her involved, people are going to turn away. And it's like, no, don't turn away. And again, I know it's not a one-player league, and I'm not trying to denigrate the W like that, but it's like just keeping the momentum going off of Caitlin, just keeping that momentum. Because right. I realize what we do here, we move on to the next story really fast. And you can't ask people's attention in perpetuity. You have to earn it, especially in this landscape.
Well, you know, it's funny, too. There could be a sort of unintended consequence if she wasn't there. She could not play in the Olympics, then everybody be more eager to see her in WNBA, and the WNBA ratings would explode. Like, nobody would watch the Olympics because nobody cares about those players. That's what everyone keeps telling me.
Right.
So nobody watches that, but everyone would be like, they're watching for Caitlin. So maybe the you know, the audience misses Caitlin and the numbers boom in the fall. That's actually what would happen.
Well, but again, that's not how every other sport's operating. No one's taking games away. No one's taking stars away. They're only adding games, adding stars, adding right. new markets. Like, if it's good for the men's sports to constantly be putting stars at, like, and adding games and adding playoff teams and add in-season tournament and add, then why would it be good for women to have Caitlin go away?
Because it's funny thing about it is there are a lot of people who don't want their star players to play in the Olympics. It's an exhibition. Like, nobody, trust me, there's not a single person in Philly who wants Joel Embiid on the court at the Olympics. It's just a complete waste. In fact, it's totally insulting.
Well, that's also because he's been injured right. so much.
Yeah, and like Mark Cuban famously didn't want Dirk to go over there. Yep. Like, yeah, I just think that what good, it's not such a huge game changer for the WNBA to have Caitlin in the Olympics. I think it's more, and like honestly, like NBA guys, I get like the Dream Team and the Redeem Team were individual cases.
Sure.
But honestly, I don't want LeBron over there. Like, you need that guy's legs. Like, if I'm the Lakers fan, if you root for an individual player, you don't necessarily want them to be part of the Olympics. So there's very different cases. Like, you might feel bad. Like, Knicks fans are mad that Jalen Brunson's a snub, but they're going to be thrilled to see him in the fall. I don't think there's this be the end all to be all. If she's in Paris and they're killing everybody and she gets 9 points and a gigantic win over Slovenia. I mean, like, is that such a game changer for the WNBA? Is it really going to grow the sport like Dream Team?
I mean, I don't know the answer, but I definitely know the answer if she's not there, because it's, I think you're getting the status quo. And
but the status quo with her is fire.
No, that's what I'm saying. Without her, you're getting the status quo of what right, you've had Olympics. For the last 7 gold medals that the women have won, which is maybe
apparently done nothing for the WNBA.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. Maybe she does help. Like, I can't tell you definitively, but I know what happens if she's not there, because that's what I've been watching. So I think that if she is there, I have to imagine that it just even increases the interest. Plus, you know, it's happening in the summer where besides baseball, you're not competing with like a ton, you know. NFL training camps haven't opened up yet. Like, you do have.
You're competing with the rest of the Olympics, but yeah, I think she'd be a nice little sideshow there. It's just, I don't think that, honestly, like Simone Biles is competing. Like, that's a big deal. I think Caitlin Clark being the 10th player on the Olympic team, it's nice, but I don't think it's a huge game changer one way or the other.
Well, again, are we asking, you know, her being in the WNBA is already the game changer.
Yeah,
this
yeah,
could
yeah.
just be a little icing on the cake or have you. And, like, again, it's different than the Winter Olympics where I know the NHL takes a break and guys go play Olympic hockey, but you still have you still have other sports that are going on. This is the summer. You might actually get a little time and a little bit of the spotlight and stage to yourself. Or not to yourself, but you're going to get some attention here. I just think it would have been smart to put her on the team. So now she's an alternate.
Yeah.
So I don't know what that does, because if there actually were veterans who didn't want her on the team, if that storyline is true, which I have no idea if it is, then what happens when she makes the team? How are they going to act? How are they going to treat her? What's going to go on here?
I assume
the interpersonal is definitely part of the story.
I mean, they're professionals. I assume they're going to treat her just fine, right? Is there any chance? What are they going to freeze her out of the buffet line?
I don't know. The Dream Team guys didn't treat Leitner very nicely,
according to
Jack McCallum's book.
But Leitner was like an intern on that team. It was a totally different scenario.
That's true.
USA Basketball said, we have to get one college player, and they picked college player of the year. Like, nobody thought Christian Leitner deserved to be there. It's different. And you know, the funny thing is, too, I was surprised to find out that Breonna Stewart made it as a rookie and Sabrina Ionescu made it as a rookie. So they probably should have just popped her on there for that very reason. But I think the scenario where she doesn't play, because this idea of the WNBA against Caitlin Clark, definitely good for ratings. Like, that's a great narrative. That's almost pro wrestling like. Like, everybody loves Caitlin Clark. Nobody's tuning in to watch. Hey, it's a love fest. I mean, obviously competition drives interest. I think this is kind of a cool setup. And they get a lot of attention. Like, that elbow was the elbow heard around the world. That's the biggest story of the entire summer.
That could be a little, forgive the comparison, a little Pete Rose. Like, Pete Rose out of the Hall of Fame is way more interesting than Pete Rose being in the Hall of Fame. If he was in the Hall of Fame, he'd be another Hall of Fame.
Right. Yeah. Like Roger Clemens throwing the bat at Mike Piazza. Like, you know, like, tension and things not working perfectly can be interesting, too. So her going to the Olympics, I'm not sure that's so interesting. Maybe it will be. I think it'll be fine. You're right, she'll get a lot of attention. I like something you said the other day. Maybe young fans will be watching that and be like, oh, I want to see this other person play in the pros. I want to see Breonna Stewart more. But I think it's marginal. Her going to the Olympics is not the game changer that her coming to the WNBA is. Maybe it's a 5% bump.
And again, she has not made the team yet. She's just an alternate. So we'll see what happens with Team USA. Meanwhile, last night, another brutal loss for her Fever. It's been rough. 3 wins on the season, but just rough. And not only were they getting blown out last night, but basically all starters got pulled from the game. And the coach afterwards said it's because she can't coach effort. I told you I thought the vibes were off on this team. I think I got a little more, ammo for that and a little more evidence, you know, because they shouldn't be super tired at this point. I know that the schedule was brutal at the beginning, but they weren't playing a back-to-back. They played on Friday and then they're playing on Monday. Well, everyone should have been rested. Yes.
There is a reason why they had the number one pick
2 years in a row.
Right.
Yeah, no,
so
they're not great.
They're not great.
But why not give effort?
Well, maybe go look at the coach then.
I was wondering about that. I'm wondering about the coach, and maybe any coach wouldn't have maybe survived it. I don't know. I don't know about Chrissy Sides.
Do they need someone in there that's going to, you know, rattle some heads? Who knows?
Run a couple easier plays for Caitlin Clark so she gets a nicer look at the basket.
Yeah, or really feature, really, really, really feature the offense around her. Like, focus it on.
Yeah, the times I've watched, it doesn't feel like anything's getting easier for her.
Right.
She's at Iowa. Everyone knew she was going to shoot the ball and everyone was trying to cover her. It kind of feels like the same thing now. Like, it doesn't feel like she's getting nice looks at the basket.
You want growth, and you're not getting growth.
Well, we're at 12 games in, but yeah, I hear.
But you're not getting, it should be slowly progressing upwards.
It feels like right now it's 2 steps forward, 1 step back, but she had that 30-point game, and then, so that's kind of natural. I mean, maybe we're putting a little too much pressure on Caitlin Clark and this team. We said, we knew they were going to be bad.
That's true, but again, when a coach is calling out effort, that's always what gets your attention. 855-212-4227. Okay, so recapping, Caitlin, an alternate, not on the team yet, but looks like she could be heading to Paris, one step away from making that team. All right, coming up, we will talk more about Dan Hurley saying no to the Lakers. What does this mean for LA? What does it mean for LeBron? So many things to get to. It's Maggie and Perloff on Infinity Sports Network.
Welcome back to Maggie and Perloff. We've been dissecting every angle of the Danny Hurley decision. He will not be going to the Lakers, going back to UConn. Maggie and I kind of disagree on some of the behind-the-scenes mechanics. I think the Lakers didn't offer him enough money. And obviously, going back to UConn to try to three-peat is very attractive. Maggie, you think there was probably some incentive for him to increase his salary at UConn as well?
Yeah, I don't know if he was actually ever interested in the Laker job. And I think that it was an important detail that only came out after the fact is that he was in an active contract negotiation with UConn when suddenly the Laker job looked really appealing. But this is why we have experts on the subject. And that's why we turn to Dana O'Neils, a senior college basketball writer for The Athletic. Dana, thanks so much for the time. How are you?
I am well, thank you. It's been a hectic few days.
Understatement, right?
Coming up for air.
Yeah, I mean, we want to dive into what that's been like for you. How real do you think Dan Hurley's interest was in the Laker job?
I think it was legit. I mean, having talked to Dan, and I've known him, gosh, since he was a player. So, you know, I think he's 51 years old, and he has told me repeatedly he's not going to coach forever. He's not going to be a lifer. I think the temptation to see, can I handle an NBA job, was legitimate. The Lakers are the Lakers, despite their current dysfunction. And, you know, you won two national championships at UConn. So, okay, what else can I do? Yeah, you can win three. So I think there's a definite interest in it. I'm not sure. Obviously, it wasn't strong enough to lure him. But I don't think this was just a ploy. I really don't. I think it was something he was trying to figure out at this point in my life. Is this the time to make the jump or not?
Do you think money played a role, like if the Lakers had upped their offer, and maybe was there an offer he couldn't refuse in any sense?
You know, I don't know. I mean, it sounds tempting to say that because obviously we're all hardwired to try to maximize our salaries, right? But I think more to the point was, I think from, you know, what I've heard from people, I haven't talked to Dan yet myself, but from what I've heard from people at UConn, I think he was a little bit sort of disgruntled isn't probably too strong of a word, but kind of curious as to why a new contract from UConn was taking so long after he won back-to-back national championships, which, you know, doesn't happen often. So I think he was more a little bit frustrated that that hadn't happened. And so, you know, if this helped steamroll things along, I think he wanted to be appreciated from UConn. Had the Lakers offered him like some exorbitant amount of money, could he have gone? Yeah, but he's wired weird. I mean, he's a competitor. I think what would be most attractive to him about taking a different job is the challenge of trying to do something people say you can't more than the cash. That's how he's hardwired. If anything was wrong with UConn is that it had become not easy, certainly, but to, like, he climbed the mountaintop, and Dan is someone who loves to climb. So what happens when you get to the top of it, right? Like, that's the challenge. And the thought of maybe being the guy that could rebuild the Lakers when nobody says you can, especially as a college coach, I'm sure is something that lit a fire under him a little bit.
We're talking with Dana O'Neil, who's a senior college basketball writer for The Athletic. Then why not take on the challenge of the Lakers? And would going back to UConn, even with a raise, going to feel stale?
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm curious to hear that for myself. I mean, he's got a press conference and he hasn't really said much about it. I do think a couple of things. One, I mean, look, the Lakers are a dysfunctional mess for a thousand reasons. So, you know, you take that job and what happens? I mean, the success rate of anybody in the NBA is minimal at this point. I do wonder, you know, the way he is, I've been to enough of his practices. I don't know if he could temper his personality appropriately to coach NBA players. You know, he is not easy to play for, and he asks a lot, and college kids are willing to take it. I'm not sure if NBA players were not. I mean, he's got a family. Everything about him is from the East Coast, born and raised in New Jersey. His parents are here. His wife is from here. Yeah, his brother's in Arizona, but, you know, who knows for how much longer. I think that probably factored into it. And look, I mean, there's going to be other NBA jobs open for Dan Hurley at some point. Maybe he can take a better one down the road. Like, again, I know it's the Lakers and it's got that name brand, but my Lord, what a mess they are right now.
Dana, I've always wondered, how does Storrs, Connecticut get the best basketball players in the world? It's not even New Jersey. It's kind of out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, and it's one of the seven wonders of the world, honestly. When I used to go, the first time I actually used to go up regularly to to UConn back when I was covering Villanova when I was working in Philadelphia. I remember asking somebody, where should I stop to eat before the game? And they said, not stores. Look, I mean, Jim Calhoun built that thing from gravel. It didn't exist when I wrote a book about the Big East, and I know this firsthand. You know, when the Big East was forming, only Dave Gavitt saw reason to take UConn because they were a nothing school in the middle of nowhere, didn't fit the Big East mold. But Jim Calhoun, by sheer personality and will, built that into something that matters. I think certainly the women's program adds cachet to it. It's got it going on both sides. Players you talk to say that they love it there because there's not a whole lot to do except play basketball. But I think at the end of the day, you know, what makes any place appealing to a athlete is the coach. UConn has been really smart. They've had great coaches. I mean, you know, even Kevin Ollie in between Calhoun and Hurley won a national championship. They've had the right person that people want to play for, and they win. That makes living in stores a whole lot more tolerable than maybe it would be if they weren't very good.
Dana O'Neill's joining us. She's a senior college basketball writer for The Athletic. And I do want to ask you quickly about Coach Hurley's practices. You know, for you get a unique insight, right? Because, Dana, you get to watch all different coaches run all different types of practices. Can you peel back the curtain for us behind the scenes? How is a Dan Hurley practice different from a Coach K practice, a Roy Williams practice, a Bill Self practice? How is it unique?
Yeah, I think, I mean, look, they're all tough. I mean, the guy, nobody is easy to play for these days. I think what makes Dan just runs hot all the time, and he's such, there's such energy in his practice from him. Like, he just can't sit still. He's running around. He's demanding. He's screaming. He does not tolerate even the smallest mistake. I went to practice this past year, and they were in Gamble at the time, and if you made a mistake, you ran the stairs in Gamble. And at one time, one of his players screwed up, and Dan didn't even have to tell him to go around the stairs. He just self-punished because they were just so accustomed to, I'm going to run. I might as well just start now before he tells me to. But what makes it work, I think, is that in the middle of practice, he's crazy, intense, insane, demanding. And then he just starts laughing and cutting jokes and making fun of somebody, and he gets in the layup line and starts shooting half-court shots. Like, so there's still this very much, he's young, he's appealing, he's fun to be around. He asks a lot of them, and they give it to him, but he also breaks it up with, you know, they like being around him because he's funny and he's clever, but he's cutting. I mean, he will just, you know, honestly, you better be made of some stuff because even if it's not yelling at you, just the looks that he gives or the withering, like, cuts and the digs, man, I mean, he's rough, but he's also fun with it. He cares about them. And honestly, having watched him at practice and then at a game, he's on the officials. Everyone knows that during the game, and he'll get on his players. But honestly, when the game starts, he's kind of like, I'm going to trust these dudes. I've put in everything I can. He's a very different coach with his team during the course of a game than he is during a practice. It's kind of fascinating to watch. Old school is kind of lazy because I think there's still a lot of coaches that are like that, and we just don't recognize that. But he is just very, very exacting. I mean, you talk to the players and they laugh about it, but there is no room for error at all.
Man, you describe what would be a great coach for the Los Angeles Lakers.
I can use a little of that.
Give me all that.
Run the steps. Why not?
The thing. I mean, that's you know, and I don't know that this is true or not, but, you know, that's the argument, is that will NBA players tolerate that, right? That's what we always hear and we always argue, is that NBA players won't tolerate that sort of coach because it's a player-driven league. Is that true? I don't know. But that seems to be the argument against.
Well, what about another former college coach? Jay Wright has been linked possibly to the job. Do you think there's any chance that will happen?
They have more of a chance of hiring me. No. No.
Why?
No. I've known Jay for a bazillion years. I mean, I guess you can never say never, right? I'd be careful to quantify anything. But having talked to him multiple times about jobs, you know, he left Villanova because he wanted to and he was ready to do something different. He is loving his CBS life and going to the beach and going to Florida and enjoying himself. The NBA thing, I think, appealed to him for a little while. And then he kind of got around it with USA Basketball and was less sure that he could do it. Like, because of all the reasons I just said, I mean, people don't know Jay what you see on the outside is Mr. Nice Guy is not who he is in practice. He's not easy to play for either. And I think having been around the USA basketball, he kind of thought that maybe he wouldn't work well in the NBA setting. Again, never say never, but I can't imagine him moving to Los Angeles. His wife would probably, like, you know, tie him to a tree first. So I could be dead wrong, but I would be peel me off the pavement shocked if he did it.
Dan O'Neill joining us, senior college basketball writer for The Athletic, and talking about Dan Hurley and his decision to stay at UConn as opposed to coach the Lakers, which was kind of this Haley's Comet of a story. It just sort of came out of nowhere, but maybe they were targeting from the beginning and they were ready to offer a contract, but at the same time, they hadn't met with him yet, and now maybe J.J. Redick is the front runner, but maybe it's Jay Wright. There's a million different ways this thing could go. Dana, before I let you go, can I ask you a question about Caitlin Clark? Obviously, you covered college hoops for a really long time. Now her transition to the WNBA, and it's been a little rough. And now the story about Team USA, she might be an alternate, but obviously was left off the initial roster. What's your thoughts on Caitlin, and what's been the most surprising part of the story?
I think what's been the most surprising part of the story is that everything she does becomes like this referendum on something. I mean, everything she does becomes a mess. It's insane. It's not her fault. She's just going out and playing basketball. And I'm amazed at just sort of how chaotic it's all been. I think there's a lot going on with that. There's, you know, a lot of, I don't say jealousy is probably too strong of a word, but sort of, hey, don't forget about us among her, you know, fellow WNBA brethren. With the Olympic situation, you know, look, the roster they made is pretty darn good. I mean, if you were going to look at that roster and tell me this is a lousy roster and they desperately need Caitlin Clark, I'd agree with you, but they have a pretty good roster going to Paris. Would it have been easier just to put her on? Yes. But at whose expense becomes the question. I thought she handled it graciously. I mean, looking at it as a challenge, like, hey, this is something I now have to work for. I'm just mesmerized, I think, though, by every time I go on Twitter or anything, it's like something else is going on with Caitlin Clark. We just can't calm down. I'm not sure what that's all about, to be honest with you, but I think at some point we just need to let her play and figure it out and move along. I think she's great for the league, and anybody who wants to argue that is crazy. People are paying attention. People are talking about the WNBA. They go to games. They're watching games. That's important. So, yeah, I get why putting her on the Olympic team makes sense from maybe a marketing perspective. But if you don't think she's going to play a lot or she's not going to make your team better, then you get to make that argument as a coach. I mean, smarter people than me are selecting that team, I would argue.
Dana, thank you so much for the time today. Dana O'Neill is a senior college basketball writer for The Athletic, breaking down the Danny Hurley stuff and a little Caitlin Clark on the side, of course. Thank you, Dana.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys. Take care.
Appreciate that. Dana's great.
Man, it's so funny. I'm not sure I could play for one of these hardcore college coaches. She painted a tough picture. Not tough, like good. Like that's how a coach team should be coached. But gosh, it sounds like you have to have a certain personality to play for Danny Hurley.
Yeah, I mean, I think all these guys are really intense, all the coaches, but it's like, how much are the players willing to take, you know?
Yeah, they do love him, though. I mean, Bob Knight was the worst, and he had a lot of very loyal players.
Yeah, but you know how it's different in college. Like, first of all, every college basketball player, and Bogush can attest to this because he does Fordham, everyone thinks they're going to the NBA, even if they're not. And so there's like this carrot, this major carrot that can be dangled out there at all times. When you're in the NBA and you're getting paid $30 million a year as a backup, then, you know, that carrot's not the same.
I hear what you're saying. Yeah, so there's not the incentive to play team basketball. But then again,
or just take any you don't want from a coach.
You have a new contract coming up, so you want playing time. There's a little bit you can do to make sure a player goes along. And also, too, on the great teams, it seems like the leader gets everyone. Like LeBron's job is also to help everybody listen to the coach, right? Because Steph Curry and the Warriors, everyone plays as a team. So I'm not sure I totally agree that all NBA guys are not going to listen to the coach.
No, but it's like if one guy is upset and if it happens to be a star, then you're basically gone. You know,
you're kind of a loser team all of a sudden. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
but there are a lot of teams that aren't like that, that play as a team.
True. Okay, Bogus is here. He's got headlines for us. Hi.
Guys, the Florida Panthers are taking a 2-0 lead to Edmonton for the next two games of the Stanley Cup Final, but the status of their captain, center Alexander Barkov, is unclear after a high hit from Leon Draisaitl in the third period last night. Florida head coach Paul Maurice asked for his feelings on the hit.
This isn't the Oprah Winfrey Show. My feelings don't matter.
That's a dated reference, but we get it. Draisaitl given a two-minute minor for roughing. The Panthers took advantage.
Anton Lundell near side. Let's it rip, tipped, and they score! Evan Rodriguez got a stick on it, and the Panthers make him pay! It's 3-1! 7:34 to go in the third! Evan Rodriguez has two!
Doug Plagan's Panthers Radio. Florida winning 4-1 for that 2-0 lead. Game three in Edmonton on Thursday night. In non-Laker head coaching news, the Suns reportedly hiring former Washington head coach and Syracuse assistant Mike Hopkins for Mike Budenholzer's staff. Caitlin Clark, just 10 points. Her Fever with their 10th loss, 89-72 at the Connecticut Sun last night. The Sun have won the last 11 meetings between these two, including three this season. In Seattle last night, the White Sox had a 4-0 lead entering the bottom of the eighth. The Mariners then scored four and kept going their next time up.
There it is right there! He crushes it! And the Mariners have gone home a winner! A three-run jackpot and big dumper, Cal Raleigh! It's a 7-4 Mariners victory!
The great Dave Sims on Root Sports. A few things to go through there. It was actually a grand slam, not a three-run homer. So the Mariners actually won 8-4, not 7-4, but who's counting? And yes, Cal Raleigh's nickname is the Big Dumper, not to be confused with Big Thumpers for Maggie's feet.
Whoa, there was a lot going on there.
Yes.
Wait, now I'm confused. I heard... What did the two topics have to do with each other, Andrew?
It's all one topic. The call was factually, we lost a base runner in Dave Sims' mind. The bases were loaded, so it was a grand slam. It wasn't
Why are you taking a shot A4. At Dave Sims?
No, just it's about facts, getting everything right.
Wait, okay. The big thing about, it's like that call was sold.
Yeah.
In parlance, you know, like you went all in on that call.
And we were off a little bit. And the guy who hit it is named Cal Raleigh, and in the call he says his nickname, which is the Big Dumper, which made me think of Maggie's feet.
But is that really his nickname?
Yeah.
It is. Okay.
The Big Dumper.
So he was accurate on that part.
That's correct, yes. He was 1-for-3 on his facts.
The White Sox socks would be named.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Nine, the whole lineup. Yeah.
We got to choose to focus on that nickname because that's one of my takeaways from this bizarre
story. Yeah, that's why I brought it up.
Has he always been called that? That's kind of a weird nickname. Can I just, like, you know how he's defending goalies not being defense players?
Yeah.
But Dave was right. Bottom line, they won the game. It didn't matter how many they scored.
Oh, there. No, but it would drive me nuts going home last night that I was off by one in a huge moment.
You don't want to get into our heads as broadcasters. Yeah. We can't even have a moment's peace.
He's practicing for John Sterling's chair.
Well, easy. That's the big question. That is the big question.
I hope they don't get a hold of that clip.
You're hired.
No,
Mandy Gregory just dropped it on our boss's desk.
He's only called like 10,000 baseball games.
Yeah.
There's plenty of tape, plenty of great tape for Dave
Sims.
He's
one of the best.
Yeah, he is.
Great guy, too. Okay, or not.
No, I think he's great. I've never
I was
met
waiting
him.
For Pete to join in. I
always very friendly to me, yes. Very nice guy. And I hope he, you know, if Seattle is not the full-term life thing for him, and he ends up in
another,
New York, that's wrong with me, too.
This is going to be the last time I ever share anything with you guys about any particular part of
about
my body.
Feet?
All I'd said was I got a size 9 shoe, and all of a sudden it's like I'm Bigfoot.
Well... if the skis fit.
Just hold on. Finding out if there's an OnlyFans for that.
Yes. Well, that's true.
Yeah, you actually started that conversation, right. To be clear.
Well, all I just said was that I, like many female broadcasters, we have been asked for feet pictures before. But I think it's kind of a joke. If I could actually make money on it, I would have done it. That means I'm a size 7 in men's. You realize this?
Okay.
I have to go back for 1 second. Yeah. Would you really take money to show your feet? You say that flippantly.
How much are we talking?
$20,000.
Definitely. I thought you were going to say $200.
You definitely do not do that. You do not show your feet for $20,000. That's a big mistake, Maggie.
Perloff, I'm telling you, I would do that for $20,000. Do you guys think money, like, what do you think?
Adam Schefter.
It's not that easy to come by.
Adam Schefter goes, what's that website where you can buy a message?
Cameo?
He went on Cameo or something. People made fun of him mercilessly for 2 years. You get your feet get out there on the internet, Maggie, that's going to be terrible
for
you.
But I don't have bad feet, so it's not like I would be,
I think you're missing the point a little bit.
Listen, what people do with my
broadcaster
feet,
Maggie Gray sells picture of her feet for $20,000. That is not the headline you want.
Oh, I would love it. I'd be like, I'm an entrepreneur, guys.
You might get back in the garden for that. Ban lifted.
I could have been there this whole time.
As your financial advisor, honestly, you don't take those puppies off for anything less than 100.
No, I feel like for you, Perloff, you'd be like, well, what state are you in? If it's in California, forget it.
Well, it's a taxable. Yeah. Well, no, you're in New York.
You and Danny Hurley. So
that's like $20,000. I actually thought $20,000. Wow, you take home $9,000 to ruin your reputation.
How would I ruin my reputation?
You don't think my feet.
It's not my anything else.
Do you think Edward R. Murrow took his shoes off and sold pictures of his feet on the internet?
In what universe?
$20,000.
I think Barbara Walters did.
By the way, $20,000 back in his day was like $1 million.
He would have if he could have, if there was an internet.
And secondly, who has ever confused me with Edward R. Murrow?
Put up that poll. Would Edward Murrow have sold pictures of his feet back in the day if such a thing existed? Yeah.
Side poll.
Yes and yes.
Also, side poll, do you know who Edward R. Murrow is? It's my pre-poll question.
Actually, winning a Murrow Award is actually now just best feet. It's not best broadcast.
The only reason that name came to mind is because Bill Walton said that Maggie and I were the clear successors to Edward R. Murrow.
He did say that.
And, he was looking down, though.
He's like,
it's a long way. That's how you can see my feet from outer space. Or 7'2", however tall.
Yeah. He was like... A tradition when we were on CBS Sports Radio is a tradition that started with Edward R. Murrow, then went to Walter Cronkite, then Dan Rather, then Taz, then Maggie and Perloff.
Checks notes.
Sorry, Taz, that's okay. Inside joke, CBS Sports Radio. I was thinking Pete talking about all the people he'd worked with the other day.
You can line them up on a balcony.
Were there any Pulitzer Prize winners on that list?
Oh, yeah, John Feinstein.
Yes.
John?
Bill Walton, very anti-moose. He liked Taz, but not moose.
He liked moose. He didn't like the moose.
Maggie and Perloff taking the tradition of Edward R. Murrow, Dan Rather, Zach Gelb.
Listen, we're not
Bart
sure
Winkler.
At the
Brian
time.
Jones.
Listen, in Bill's defense, he was very stoned.
No, he's been very nice.
Really? I'm just kidding.
He was extremely nice, well-researched. He was awesome.
He was fantastic. And we have that clip now forever, which was really a compliment.
But my point is that just an esteemed journalist like yourself should hold out for more money when they show their feet to strangers.
I'm about to eat lime Jell-O with tuna fish in it. What part of me is an esteemed journalist? That died the moment I left Sports Illustrated. And honestly, I don't even know if it was there when I was at
Yeah.
Just in case the Jell-O doesn't do it, we're going to wash it down
with bowls. I'm just saying, bargain Danny Hurley style. Get different competing offers out there.
We should get
Woj do a report. Maggie Gray is willing to sell her feet. She's getting offers from here, and here.
If I had Woj in the bag like that, it'd be great. Mouthpiece.
We should get a journalist to call you eating that, whatever that thing is, on whenever we do it.
Well, I mean, I was going to go with Bogish, but sure. Perloff eating the chili.
Wait. By the way, Maggie, you have a media mouthpiece yourself.
Yeah, but no one's going to believe it coming from me.
Well, that's
I'm too close to the project.
No, you're also too cheap. $20,000 for foot pictures? Heck, I'm thinking about investing in that. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not into it.
You got to tell us how many inbox messages you get with that offer.
We're doing a little test today. What makes you think I'm not putting out the feelers right now? America.
I think you are.
She's typing with her feet right now.
I want to be.
I don't exactly have the assets of Kate from Edmonton, so I got to go to the next best thing.
I want to be your agent. Like, yeah, we have to publicize these feet. Maybe go to a game and hold them up for the camera.
I think you should pitch that to Ryan Hurley. I'm sure.
Instead of like,
see how that conversation goes.
Yeah. Hey, new boss, let's sit down. Yeah. Can I put my feet up on the desk? You know how people like have those big heads that they hold up, like in the crowd.
Yeah, definitely.
It'd just be my feet.
Yes.
Behind someone shooting free throws.
Giant foot.
It's about the same size.
That's true.
Feet are actual size.
It's like actual representation. Not to scale.
You see Dave LaGreca a foot and Mike Francesa.
That's actually the sideline for Oregon that means handoff.
Yeah, I think it would be go for the field goal. It would be more logical, but no, you're right. You want to mix him up.
No, that would, of course, like USC is going to sniff that out.
Yeah.
I think we got to go for mystery here. I think we got to release the pictures that we assume are your huge, glorious feet. We never confirm it.
How about one toe at a time?
Yeah. I mean, we're sitting on a gold mine here, people.
She's Maggie, standing on them.
You're standing on a gold mine.
Two gigantic goals.
I don't know why we expect Maggie to share some of this foot bunny with us.
$5,000 a toe.
We're the idea men.
Yeah. You need us in your corner to sell these feet properly.
No, I'm going to need all this money to buy my gigantic shoes. there's going to be nothing left over for you guys. Giving me a pedicure is like a two-man job. It's like they wash down
elephants.
Paint
roller.
Need a scaffold crew.
So funny.
We need a team.
So funny. If you're not actually... I've been around you every day for 3 years and not noticed your feet once. They're so normal. I love this fact that we got this. If you had never said that, we would never know you had big
feet. Somebody on the chat was like, Maggie's feet are webbed. I'm like, wait a minute. That's not the joke. The joke is that they're big. I'm not an amphibian.
But you don't need flippers when you swim.
No. Very fast. 855-212-4227. Don't call in about that, actually. I'm not sure why. I just gave the number. Coming up, we've got the new odds on the odds on favorite, for finals MVP. The numbers are changing rapidly. Get to that next.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Got a little update for you from Bengals mandatory minicamp, Pearl. What's the latest?
So according to Rap Sheet, Ian Rapoport, NFL Network, T. Higgins, the franchise tag wide receiver, has still not signed his tag and is not present. He is not subject to fines. That must be something to do with not signing the tag yet. Jamar Chase is present. That's a nice sign because apparently Jamar Chase wants to work on his deal. He's still on his rookie deal. Where do you see this T. Higgins thing going?
I see T. Higgins coming back to the team.
With whatever they offer him.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. But
I mean, not with just for 1 year and then maybe hitting the market next year?
Because I don't see where the trade's going to come in now that's all of a sudden going to turn the Bengals' heads, you know? I guess maybe if there's kind of an injury or something in training camp and a team gets really desperate. But again, this is for a wide receiver, not a quarterback, so I don't know how desperate teams get for wide receivers. Like, you know, if someone goes down in training camp or something, would they trade for T?
That money, because you have to, it's not just training him. You have to trade for him and you have to pay him. We talked about it earlier in the show, the wide receiver pay is getting crazy.
Yep.
So if Justin Jefferson, it's like getting another quarterback in the building. So I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, you had your 7 points.
Yeah.
For why?
Yeah, it's up on, I'm doing these pieces for Athlon Sports, which is awesome. And it's funny. It was going great until you had to bring up A.J. Brown to the Eagles. Which I got a couple tweets saying, what about the fact?
Your teammate.
I'm like, what the heck, Maggie? You're supposed to support me. But I think I had some really good points. But
you definitely do.
There's no rule here, but I do think I think the pay for running backs was huge, and we didn't realize that the market could fall apart. Because if you're going to pay $35 million for Justin Jefferson, and it's going to keep going, if CeeDee Lamb, you think CeeDee Lamb is going to match that?
I think he's going to get damn close.
And that means the next guy is going to match it. We're going to get to 40 soon. Like, this can't continue because there's not going to be enough space.
Yeah, talking about the NFL, I just... I'm waiting for, okay, what do they call it? Market inefficiencies or whatever,
yeah.
Where everyone's paying big money for running backs, then you zag and you just do it by committee and you don't pay anybody.
Right.
Or everyone's paying big money for wide receivers, now you zag and you just do like a wide variety, different flavors of wide receiver.
By committee. It's exactly the same thing.
Right. I mean, Chiefs are a little different because they always have Kelce. He's not... He is a wide receiver one in a tight end body with a tight end salary.
Okay.
They got very lucky there that, well, not lucky, they drafted him, but he's played ball with them and probably could be paid a lot more if he like was reclassified as a wide receiver. Anyway, the real one comes with the quarterbacks. Who's going to be the team? And I'm kind of looking at the 49ers on this one. Like, who's going to be the team that's saying, listen, $60 million or whatever for a quarterback is $60 million a year is just way too much. So how are we gonna market inefficiency that? How are we gonna circumvent having to pay that much of the cap to a quarterback?
Well, I mean,
whose team is gonna do that?
Tom Brady took a little bit less, so he didn't get up to 60. And first of all, I figure it's gonna be Dallas with Dak possibly is gonna get 60, not necessarily Brock Purdy and the Niners.
No, I'm wondering if Brock Purdy and the Niners, like, do the Niners draft somebody? Like, do they do something to try to?
I think they pay Brock Purdy 50.
They probably do. But
yeah, I see what you're saying. But I think
like your Eagles try to do it with Jalen Hurts, I think,
yeah.
With drafting him and sort of like maybe that Carson Wentz, you push him out, but then they paid Hurts because he got it to the Super Bowl.
It's so much easier. I mean, as I mentioned, there's 10 great wide receivers out of the NFL every year. There are not 10 great quarterbacks. Supply and demand. Basic economics, Meg. I tell you all the time. That's why we got to sell your feet for the right price.
The pictures, not the actual feet. I need those. Ryan Botcher, thank you. Pete Pilotti, thank you. Andrew Bogish, Andrew Kaplan, Weedos, coffee drinkers. You know who you are. We're back tomorrow.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.